This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang, with the top business stories of the day. I mean, business stories that are really important to how our world being shaped. Now, what are those, Chuang?
Well, it was a three-day weekend for us, so we've come back after, you know, an extended break. And I guess out of the whole plethora of international news items, you know, two things stand out. One is, of course, the fact that the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, has set May 2017 as the deadline to invoke Article 50, and the other issue that is really concerning markets is the whole Deutsche Bank issue and the fine of 14 billion euros, I think, which has been postulated by the DOJ of the American Department of Justice and all the issues surrounding that.
Now, with the first story, Brexit, Theresa May, I understand that she was in fact a Remainer. She was quietly so. She was part of the Conservative Party Remain wing, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, obviously, when you assume the position of the British premiership, you've got to assume the position of the Conservatives as well. And I think she is in her role as the person to invoke the divorce from the EU. It's just that by invoking, by stipulating May 2017 as the dates to invoke Article 50, she set into motion a two-year deadline to complete all the issues. So there's two main issues to address. One is, of course, the trade deal with the European Union. And the second is, of course, the terms of the divorce. And a lot of people are saying that 24 months is not enough. You know, you can't settle the detritus from a 35 year marriage over just 2 years. It takes a lot more than that.
Well, you know, I think many of the media in Britain was outlined the difficulties that would be encountered. I mean, this was in fact their way of saying, you know, exiting the European Union is not a wise move. And what I remember from it included the fact that Britain would have to almost immediately settle all its debts, that it wouldn't be part of any of the negotiations that involved them. And that, you know, one of the things that if Britain was looking for is some sort of association with the European Union, like Sweden does and such, that it would include one of the things that was most galling to those who voted for the Brexit, which was free movement of people. So if immigration was something that the Brexiters wanted, they won't get it in some of the kinds of trade, some of the kind of associations available for Britain kind of post the Brexit.
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, the main reasons for the UK leaving the European Union was very much political in nature, this whole issue of immigration and the free movement of human capital between borders. But really now the concern is, and this, you know, this borne out in the how the pound is, you know, how the British sterling has behaved against the dollar. It's at a fresh 30-year low. It's basically economic in nature, and the people are fearing the collapse could hit British growth. Because, I mean, when you consider all things being said and done, the EU only takes about 16% of its exports from the United Kingdom, whereas the UK's products go to, you know, account, well, the European Union accounts for 44% of UK exports. So the UK needs the EU, economically speaking, more than the EU needs the UK.
So, but, you know, decisions have been made. And as you say, as Prime Minister, she's taking, she's carrying through with a decision that was made by the British public. There's very little chance, I guess, of revisiting this referendum. I think, though, there were some early attempts to do that.
Well, I mean, she's got to perform, right? She's now charged with the whole task of leaving. And if she doesn't do it, you know, some people in the Conservative Party might say, you know, you're backtracking your promises and you might be seen as an ineffectual leader.
Right. Talking about performance, she was in New York. She gave her maiden speech at the UN. Also reported that in New York, she met with Rupert Murdoch. And this for somebody who's been said to be, you know, have kept the media at arm's length, not wanting to really play ball with any of the big media players. Rupert Murdoch, of course, a big proponent of the Brexit. He campaigned in his media campaign for the Brexit. He was famously, he said that, you know, he can take the back door into Downing Street anytime, but when he goes to Brussels, they don't really care about him. So that's a very interesting position. She's now met with Rupert Murdoch. What do you think she did that?
Well, she's obviously, you know, you got to know which side of the bread your curry is being pasted on, right?
to mangle a lovely idiom. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the Nutella. But you know, you do need the media. All politicians need the media, and you know they don't come bigger than obviously Rupert Murdoch. The fact that she has announced May 2017 as the deadline, obviously, is going to give us some favorable headlines in the conference halls of Downing Street. Clearly, but yeah, you know, it is how it is.
Well, moving on, the next story, of course, that you mentioned, you said is really going to be important in terms of the world financial architecture, is the problems of Deutsche Bank. Now, how will that affect financial architecture globally? And, you know, what are the implications of this fine that they're facing?
Well, I mean, Deutsche has really been in the headlines for all the wrong reasons the last, you know, couple of years. And it's come to a head of steam because obviously, you know, the Department of Justice wants to fine Deutsche 14 billion euros or something, which is just a shade at or near its entire market capitalization. It lost something like 90% of its value the last couple of years. So people are wondering whether Deutsche could be the Lehman moment that everybody's expecting after, you know, essentially 8 years of fizz in global equity markets. It's just that there are a lot of distinctions between Deutsche and Lehman, clearly, because Lehman's didn't have the capital position that Deutsche does. Deutsche also has a lot of assets that it can sell in case it needs to. And it's also got the back door into the European Central Bank's reserves in case it needs to shore up reserves. And these are the things that Lehman didn't have 8 years ago.
Okay, for the untutored, Chuang, what is a Lehman moment?
Sorry, so the Lehman moment is basically the heart attack, the catalyst that caused the heart attack in financial markets in 2008. You know, it's when everything just kind of imploded at the same time, which is faith in the financial system, which is when people stopped investing and there was basically no capital in the system and basically there was just no confidence at all.
Okay, well, if you and I in little old Kuala Lumpur are talking about it, anticipating something like a contagion effect or whatever, are steps being taken to avoid it? I mean, this fine that's coming and all that might be implied by it, are there ways, and do we have reports in the news about steps that are being taken so that when the moment does arrive, it doesn't in fact pop, you know, the global cherry?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are saying that the Department of Justice, the $14 billion euro fine, it was just an opening salvo. Nobody really expects them to get hit for $14 billion. And in fact, Deutsche set aside $5.5 billion euros anyway to settle those claims. Is it nobody on investment circles expect them to be hit by that much? So, yeah.
No, so do we, I mean, is anybody really expecting this to lead to a kind of meltdown?
Nobody really knows, you see. That's the problem. And at this point in time, there's so many things happening in financial markets that it could be, you know, we could be hit by as anything, you know, from 5 to 10 things. You know, Brexit is obviously one. It's one of the main things that basically our central bank governor, Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim, cited as one of the reasons why he cut interest rates ahead of time, you know, and that we haven't even discussed the whole possibility of the Syrian crisis or the, you know, oil markets and things like that. So,
okay, do we have any other stories in our crosshairs that you know, will be, you know, kind of shaping the business day, as it were?
Well, I mean, from a local front, yeah, you know, obviously loans growth is a big issue in Malaysia because obviously the impact of the financial sector on our whole economy. But, you know, we've got the Edge talking about how loans growth is at the slowest since May 2003. You know,
and
when
that's
people
just
are not borrowing money.
Now, is that just caution and sensible caution on the part of financial institutions, you know, not wanting to get ourselves into a situation of non-performing loans and such?
Well, the fact is, you know, Malaysians love to borrow money. We've got one of the highest household debt to GDP ratios in ASEAN, if not the highest. I think we've crept up to something like 90% of GDP. So I think the central bank is quite aware of the systemic risk of people defaulting on loans. And in fact, you know, Maybank's latest quarterly net profits fell 16% on the year because they set aside much more money to cover bad loans. A 250% year-on-year jump in loan loss provisioning. That's huge, you know. So obviously, people in the upper reaches of government and, you know, the central banks, the regulators, are quite aware that this slowdown is coming and we've got to prepare for it.
Well, we'll have more top business news after this at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.